Welcome to the Soul Summit podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Preedy. I'm here to help bridge the gap for women and families in the outdoors, build a community of adventure junkies, and roll out your weekly dose of positive vibes. With almost two decades in the health and fitness world and an untamable passion for hunting in the outdoors, my mission is to help you live your bucket list life and move boldly in the direction of your dreams. Meet us here weekly as I connect with like-minded outdoor men and women to discuss health and mindset, accountability, life and entrepreneurship, as well as all things hunting and epic untold stories. The Soul Summit podcast is brought to you by Maven Optics, Baku e-bikes, Hoyt Archery, Onyx Maps, and Sawyer Products. For more information on these companies or to access the Soul Summit podcast discount codes, be sure to check out our show notes. We are jumping right into another episode of the Soul Summit podcast. I'm excited to bring this one to you. Joy Seward comes to me from RecPack. I was introduced to her by my dear friend Jessica Harris from G4 at the Portland Sportsman Show this year. She's like, hey, there's somebody that you should come talk to. And we got to connect for a bit and just briefly put our heads together. And together in this episode, we talk about what she does in the outdoors through expeditions. She's a certified Knowles instructor, and she talks about the journey to getting that certification and a few of the kind of hurdles along the way, some scenarios and situations that have happened that helped her really see and gain independence in the outdoors, but it also taught her a lot about risk mitigation, how to do big or small style expeditions safely. So keeping you dry, comfortable, fed, sheltered, and prepared for any situation that you might get into. She's really passionate about that, as well as stewardship, conservation, and really making the world around you a better place. This is kind of a fun and off-the-cuff conversation. Joy is definitely a bubbly, positive personality, and it was absolutely just an honor to get to know her more. She's also shares her thoughts and insights on solo adventuring, as well as some tips, the importance of community, and how you can use that to find mentorship and opportunities, what balance or kind of lack of for her looks like in her busy life. She was able to talk about her dad's passing in college and how that kind of changed the trajectory of her future and where she is now. Let's dive right into this conversation with Joy Seward of RecPack. I'm excited for today's conversation, as I am every time, but I get to talk to a guest today who I don't know a ton about. All I know is you are passionate about fostering independence and empowering women and people in the outdoors. And I know that this is going to be a good conversation because that definitely speaks to my soul. I have Joy Seward on the other line. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's really good to meet another Eugener.
Yes. Well, when we were introduced by Jess Harris at G4 at the Portland Sportsman Show, she's like, you have to meet Joy. She's, you know, you were across from the G4 booth, and she's like, you two are kindred spirits. You have to connect. And so immediately after talking to you, I was like, let's get you on the podcast. You know, I definitely want to share more about your brand and what you're doing, but also just your mission and the way that you're showing up to help support and educate people in the outdoors, especially in the adventure space. So I won't dumb it down. I will let you just go ahead and give us all of the good details on who you are, Joy, and what excites you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. You should also know that I walked away from that event and I called some of my friends and I was like, I met this woman, Courtney. She's been in Eugene for longer than I have been and I've never met her, and she has this whole new outlet of getting women in the outdoors. I've been in the outdoor space for about 7 years as my career. I take students out into the wilderness and using technical skills like mountaineering, to horse packing, to backcountry skiing and rock climbing. We lead expeditional courses to learn both technical skills and to do some like self-empowerment through it. Outside of that, I just love being in the wilderness and playing and rock climbing and having good community around. So when I got a chance to meet you, it felt like a really cool fit. Don't find a ton of females in that space, and so it's always nice to see how everyone's using the outdoors as a way to live.
It's to your point. Yes. Like, I feel like it is few and far between. The shows have been great because I see women, you know, maybe come through with their husbands or boyfriends or whatever. And I'm always like, do you hunt too? You know, like, what do you like to do outside? Because, yeah, it does feel a lot of times like we're kind of stepping into the man's world, which, you know, is fine. But just feeling like you're connecting with like-minded women can be so special. I'm curious, though, Joy, what inspired this love and excitement for nature and these wild adventures that you go on? Where did that originate?
Yeah, I think it was in high school and college. I was at a pivotal moment in my career. I was a pretty passionate horseback rider growing up in the South. I had a convenient farm nearby and just really latched on to that kinesthetic learning and rewarding hard work and discipline and skill set, as most sports do in that age range. And then in college, I had a hard experience where my dad passed away of cancer pretty quickly. And as I think a lot of people could look at their time in college as such a pivotal moment, going through that experience just was kind of like a snow globe shaking up what I thought was safe and the trajectory of my career. And it was actually through that experience that I found rock climbing. And I have a specific mentor named Katie who reached out when my life was being shaken up and just would take me rock climbing. I remember the first time leaving the house after my dad had passed was to go rock climbing outside for the first time. And I was this like little woman who didn't know anything about being there outdoors and risk management and adventure. And it was like this whole new world. Both a really good community, really good learning experiences, and then also like a new sense of adventure. And I had climbed the equestrian world for a decade at that point and felt pretty burnt out by it. And so I knew how to quickly move up into a technical sport. And I took those skills and just went at rock climbing pretty full force. And then from rock climbing, I went to mountaineering, I went to endurance cycling, to backcountry skiing, and just the outdoor playground is endless. And I just kept on pointing my fingers at all the skills I can learn. And then just given who I am and my values, independence is pretty key for me. I remember in college, a lot of my friends had male partners that would take them rock climbing for the first time. And maybe it was a little ego-driven, but I was like, I will not have a man show me how to do something, and just was able to get really good mentorship and feel that fulfillment of community through learning these technical skills, teaching others, mentoring, and the whole circle of mentorship. So that's what got me involved with it.
That's awesome. What have been some of the biggest hurdles for you in kind of climbing into those bigger experiences and doing some of those things that you have to start as a complete newbie in?
I love growing projects and starting at something in a blank canvas and just running full force and trying to figure it out. I'd say moving from I love the outdoors and I want to do recreation to then I'm going to make my living off of the outdoors and managing risk and bringing other people into the outside is a whole nother skill set to get involved. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it was just mentorship in that. It's, you know, when your scope of practice is, say it was this long, you know, my personal expeditions, I occupy a range of skills on one end of the spectrum. And then when I have students underneath me, I have to be so much more conservative because the ripple effect of risk if something were to go wrong is pretty big. And so one of the biggest hurdles is that is just learning and getting a rhythm of how to both recreate on your own and then recreate with students is so different. And I had to learn so many skills. You know, I first came into guiding and thought, oh, I'm a really good rock climber, I'm a really good horse packer, now I'm gonna take people on wilderness trips. And while technical skills is like 25% of the equation, 75% of it is like the human factor and how to manage humans and grow with them and work with them and manage a community and all the various pieces that happen when humans are stressed or humans are happy or humans are on the edge of a cliff and freaking out. You know, it's just a whole nother discipline.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Literally or figuratively on that cliff, right? So you talk a lot about risk mitigation. I have to ask you, what does that look like for you in planning these events? But also, what does that look like? Like, how would you encourage somebody to go out there and get started? Let's say backpacking. They want to pick a trail and they want to go in maybe for an overnight, their first overnight. You know, I think that there are some really good safety measures that we can take to put ourselves in the best position possible. But what are your recommendations and what does that look like for you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You know, when I teach these wilderness trips, especially the hiking format ones, I love them because I'll take students out for 30 days who had never been backpacking before. And the last week of the 30-day expedition, they'll go out for an entire week by themselves. And we say, meet us 40 miles at this X. That's where the pickup is. Hopefully we don't hear from you until that point. And so leading up to what we call independent travel, we teach them all these different skills in order to be able to have the tools to go out and do that challenge. And we call it the Swiss cheese model of risk. If you look at a block of Swiss cheese, there's all these holes through it. And those are the perceived risks that we're going to take on when doing a challenge. But if you hold up a bunch of layers of Swiss cheese, eventually you won't be able to see the holes because you have so many preventers. So when you ask the question about someone going backpacking for the first time, I'd just say it all starts with education and then having the resources to be able to have plan A, B, and C. Whether that's trying a new water filtration system and then it breaking and knowing how to boil your water as a backup, to getting caught in a storm and being really wet and knowing five different ways of getting warm fast. Those are all like risk mitigation tools to take on the risk of being in the outdoors with a tent and not having a weather app to know when the weather's coming and what's going to go sideways.
Do you feel like there's a handful of ways to mitigate risk that are more important than others? And if you could only tell somebody, you know, three or four or five things, what would those things be?
Okay, that's a really good specific question. Is there any like, are we saying risk when backpacking or risk when just going into the outdoors? Or maybe like, let's take on a specific topic for that question.
Yeah, the backpacking piece.
You know, I love taking students into the wilderness because I think it really grows their comfort zone. We call it overcoming adversity when something goes wrong and students have to dig deep, figure out a new sense of resiliency, pull it out, use it, and then you get like the human growth learning through that challenge. And so when we talk about risk of going into the outdoors, I think it depends like where someone's comfort zone is. Do they have to have a cup of hot coffee every morning? Do they need to have a 5-inch sleeping pad? What if that sleeping pad pops? Are they going to feel vulnerable? You know, it's all these perceived risks, and it's all about our tolerance for adversity when managing it. And I'm not trying to say that people should get out of their comfort zone and it's mandatory to not have the luxuries around them. I mean, I always bring a National Geographic with me, and that is my like favorite thing to read every night. And it's a waste of weight, but it's my luxury and wouldn't want someone to take that away. But when managing risk, I think it's also managing our comfort and our ability to be stressed and adaptable. So much I think of society is catered to our comfort and security. And when you get outdoors and you just have only things you can carry on your backpack, you really have to stretch your scope of comfortability. So then when managing risk and going in the outdoors, I always tell people like, you just gotta start somewhere and do it. Mm-hmm. Get a mentor, get a female mentor. That is huge. I am the woman I am today because of all the females that stood behind me and taught me skills. And I thank them so much for that. So I think the biggest like risk mitigation is education and getting the right education to go do what you are aspiring to do.
Absolutely. That mentorship piece, the education, the resource behind that is so important because, you know, we take so much more of the discomfort out in a lot of those ways, especially mentally, when you feel like you know what you're doing. So I have to ask, you know, what have been the more, or maybe let's focus on one piece. In your experiences, what has been one of the most uncomfortable situations that has actually turned to build the most confidence in your journey?
Oh, you know, when you asked me that question, I kind of thought of my origin story of RecPack, which is the company and the startup I'm working to build. Do you mind if I share a little bit
Please
about that
do.
Experience? So I'm working on a project called RecPack. We are an outdoor food where you just add water, shake, and you get a complete nutrition and a meal out of it. And it all started because I was out on a glacier in the Chugach of Alaska. I was on a 2-week mountaineering expedition with a bunch of friends. We were learning skills so that we could get qualified to then go out onto the glaciers of Alaska and teach mountaineering to students who sign up for our NOLS courses. And you know, I think a lot of people think of mountaineering as like this beautiful, glamorous, it is a combination of backpacking, rock climbing, river crossing, intense weather. It's the ultimate test of all these outdoor skills is how high in elevation and how steep of terrain can you travel. So in my mind, it's kind of glamorized in the outdoor community. It's very respected, but you know what? A lot of people forget about mountaineering is it's a lot of staying warm, staying dry, and hungering in storms. And that's all what we experienced on this trip. For 5 days, we had a pretty intense storm of 70-mile-hour winds knocking at our tent. I should insert a video for you to get the full taste of the experience. And over like 6 feet of snow covering us to the point where we had to rotate a shoveling group every 3 hours just to build up wind walls on the side of us so that our tent wouldn't collapse and we'd be stranded. I mean, there was no helicopter. No one could come get us in that storm. It was just technical skills trying to get us through it. We actually had like a rotation team where one person would shovel, one person would cook, and then we would call it active drying when we're in our sleeping bag, putting pieces of cold cloth or like cold clothing around us to try to warm it up with our body heat. And so we would just be active drying each other's clothes. I think I realized like my love language was my good friend Maddie being taking my pants and putting them in her sleeping bag and drying them for me. I was like, thank you. I don't have to go through that. But it was through that training and getting certified. We actually, you asked me what was the hardest thing that I'd done in the outdoors, or you asked me what was like one of the most challenging things. And during that trip, as we were training to become mountaineers, we got a satellite call that two friends had passed in an avalanche accident on Denali at the same time that we were out there. And so we came back after spending this very intense storm, very intense 2-week training trip. And the director of the campus said, hey, we got a mountaineering instructor that's hurt. We need someone to go on to the glacier now. Who's up for it? And we all were like, we haven't seen green grass in 2 weeks. We just want to drink and eat some vegetables and like touch the grass after being in that storm. And there's a job that needed to be done and an opportunity to be with students. So I ran and jumped in, volunteered myself for it. And within about 8 hours of being flown out of the glacier, I was flown back in to work a course. And that's where I met my partner, Deed, and we are growing RecPack together, and it all stemmed from that pretty intense training trip.
Wow. Yeah, that does sound intense. And I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, sometimes we put ourselves in these positions where we don't quite know what we're getting into. And that's, I guess, the beauty too about Mother Nature is you never know exactly what she's going to dish out. But being able to go out there and test your skills, build your skills, get that kind of residual education from the people around you too. Cause I think that's one of the beauties about finding a mentor, finding a community is that, you know, people know things that you don't know and vice versa.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think the power of community, you know, on that trip, we were delayed because there was such a big storm over us to be picked up from our helicopter that we were running out of fuel because we only rationed 2 weeks worth of fuel. So we started stuffing snow in our water bottles and putting it on our jacket and trying to melt it out so that we would have a water source and we weren't using the rest of our fuel. And it's just, it's that whole stretching your comfortability. And when you're with really good people in the outdoors, it's kind of really fun. I mean, not getting dehydrated and not drinking or eating for a day, I'd never say that's fun, but being with really high quality people and being able to laugh about it, you can do a lot more than you think.
Absolutely. You are spot on with that. It makes the experience so much more rich too when you get to have that connection with people. What are some of the most common mistakes or faux pas, if you will, you see in new adventurers, specifically speaking about like the backpacking and backcountry kind of experiences?
I think one, we have a culture where with REI and all these internet influencers and all the stuff on Amazon, there's so much that people can buy and so much money that people can spend to be in the outdoors. And I know I really love going out because life is so simple and you just rely off of really good humans, incredible environment, and eating food. You know, it's just, and sleeping really well. It's just four things that really matter out there. And so I think a common mistake that I see is people thinking they need all this gear. I just did a avalanche ski training up in Eastern Oregon, and it was raining and snowing, and none of us had $1,000 rain jackets, so we just put trash bags over us and then jumped on the snowmobile and ran out to the mountain. You know, there's ways of doing it where you don't have to spend a ton of money on really nice gear. You can buy anything from a $500 backpack to, at Knowles, we use a backpack $100 or $2, and they both work the same. So I think that's one mistake, and I think it's a big barrier for people, especially females, when trying to know what gear I should get. Do I have all the newest stuff? You know, you don't need all of it. You can live life really simply and just have the necessities at whatever cost range is comfortable to you.
Definitely. I think that is big. And like you said, it can be a barrier for people not feeling like they have the right gear to go into those situations. And definitely there are circumstances where you need to be very prepared with all of the right pieces and elements. But, you know, typically for that newbie or somebody going in just to dip their toe in the water, they're not necessarily going on some big excursion style experience. So being able to start smaller, I think, is something that's so important. Feeling like you go out, you know, for building your confidence, instead of going in for a week, you could go in for a day, or you could go in for a night. You know, those kind of things, I think, help you get a little bit more of a feel of maybe what you do or don't want to carry the next time, you know, how you might want to pack differently or the gear. But I appreciate you bringing that up, because I feel like a lot of people, you know, end up feeling like they can't get started in something because they can't, you know, afford that piece of equipment or whatever. So that's a great, great area to think about.
Yeah, and I think more powerful than just figuring it out on your own with less is making sure you have the right education and knowing what to do. I see so many people in the outdoors, unfortunately, not having the right education, and then they actually leave normally a hard impact on the environment, not knowing leave no trace skills or how to care for an ecosystem or leaving it how you found it. And then getting into a rough situation where they didn't pack as much food, they didn't pack the proper clothes, and then they get cold and wet and hungry, and then they have to rely on others to help them because of the lack of education. So when I say you don't need to buy all of that, I fully mean it, but I do think that you need to invest in the proper education and tools so that you don't have to rely on all the fancy gadgets to get you through. But you know what's important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and having that education piece or mentorship or whatever that looks like also helps you figure out what you do and don't need, you know, because you could get on REI's website and they could give you a list for backpacking and it's got a bazillion things. Probably most of them they sell at their store, but that's not necessarily what everybody's going to need. So great points with that. We talked a little bit about, or you really referenced, cold and wet and uncomfortable. So I want to switch gears here for a second to kind of talking about how to be comfortable and warm when you're out there in the elements. What are some of the go-tos for you that you either, you know, maybe it could be trying to stay dry or getting your shelter at first, but what does sleeping, being warm and being comfortable look like for you?
Yeah, I would say if anyone's listening to this and they want to walk away with a pro tip to stay warm forever, I would introduce them to the baby Nalgene, or even if you just have a big Nalgene. I fill it up with hot water, boiling water. I screw on the lid. I test that the lid is not going to drip water on me. And then I put that in my jackets. And that is like a thermos in your body. That, and then I will have to shout out my brand Rec Pack, because it's a high concentrated meal with 700 calories that you just add water, shake, and you get a complete nutrition. And so in moments where you're under calories is normally when you're the coldest and most vulnerable, and you don't have time to heat up food or your body's not feeling good to chew a Snickers, being able to drink something and have the nutrition that your body needs to then build up its engine for warmth, it's, I think, pretty key. I was teaching a backcountry ski course in the Tetons last year. Temperatures range from negative 20 to about 10 degrees Fahrenheit. And we had a student go pretty close to hypothermia. She wasn't eating enough. And we shoved two baby Nalgene bottles, one in between her thighs. That's right next to an artery to warm up her blood. One right in her chest. We put tons of sleeping bags on top of her. I gave her a Rec Pack. She drank 700 calories, you know, wholesome nutrition, and we were able to evac her in a day after her not fully recovering from that. But being able to get dry, have a water source, and have proper nutrition is like pretty key for staying warm out there.
Do you tend to go with the synthetics or with down?
You know, I normally actually synthetics all the way. My sleeping bag is down. I put it in a trash bag. I put that in a sleeping bag compressor, and then it lives at the bottom of my pack. So it's like dual layers. But last year I spent over 8 months living and sleeping in the wilderness, and I don't have the money to buy a bunch of down stuff. It's lovely, but I feel like it wears pretty easily. So my synthetics, I live and breathe in them. And, you know, if I get just cold, I just add another jacket on and just have a good layering system for that.
Do you typically find yourself out on adventures and experiences with other people, or do you do anything solo?
You know, I actually did my first big solo trip this spring. Because I am a guide and most of my time in the outdoors is either leading students and teaching them through long format wilderness trips. And then when I'm not guiding, I'm always working on my technical skills. So whether that's climbing a wall or trying to get my ski laps in or something of that nature, even the idea of just backpacking for fun was kind of burnt out for me for a while. But this spring, I took my bike, and after working for 30 days straight on the glacier, I did a little solo bike packing trip up in Denali, and it was incredible. And it was super slow and beautiful and by myself, and I would love to do more of them. But when my occupation is taking people in the outdoors, going out for my own personal like breathing time has been hard to create.
That makes sense. Definitely. You know, and especially with as much time as you're spending out there, those are big chunks. You know, I don't know very many people, really, if any, that go out for 30 plus days at a time. So it's really great to be able to go do that. I was wanting a little bit of like the contrast or comparison between, you know, being out there with people as opposed to solo. And I ask that because, you know, I have a lot of people that listen in that don't have partners or don't have hunting buddies or don't have somebody that they can go backpacking with, you know, and I think that there's always a really big barrier in that kind of fear factor of taking on some of those challenges by yourself. And, you know, the only thing that I can say to that is the only way you're going to get stronger is by exercising that muscle. It's putting yourself in those situations and scenarios and testing the waters out, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I would hate for the lack of community to derail anyone from experiencing the outdoors. And I also think that a big factor and drive for me to be in the outdoors is the community and like-minded people that I surround myself with. So I think for folks just getting started with it, finding resources to latch on to other people just getting started with it. And part of certain like female women's backpacking groups on Facebook, or even like, any, I mean, this is an open invite to any female in the Eugene, Oregon area who wants to reach out to me to reach out and connect with other people. Because I think a really big part of going out into the wilderness is experiencing community and creating your own sense of cultural norms and laughing at funny things and being your authentic childhood self without the constraints of, you know, everyday chores.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Life gets so much simpler when you're out there. And I think that's what draws me into those kind of remote backcountry experiences, is you have to work for everything you have. For one, you either, you know, most likely had to carry it in with your own two legs. If not, if it's things like refilling water, like you can't just turn on a faucet, right? It's not that easy. Yeah. You have to go find the water source. You have to purify or boil or, you know, get it to a drinkable level. You have to, if you're having fires, acquire the wood to have the fire. You know, you have to set up the shelter. I think those things are such a beautiful element because, like you said early on, we are living in a day and age where it's really easy to be comfortable and to stay comfortable. And until you really force yourself to get in the position, I think that we have almost like this, we take for granted the things that we have, the ease of walking to the kitchen and getting a meal, the ability to go flush the toilet, you know, when you go to the bathroom, like all of those things are things that you typically don't have when you're out. And I think it just forces you to really tap into those more kind of primal roots.
Yeah, it teaches you your what matters and the priorities to have. You know, should you be putting a bunch of time into cleaning the house? Or could you spend that when you're out every day picking up and removing to another campsite, you know, it reminds you of what is the priorities of living.
What has been the most rewarding experience, if you could pinpoint one, in all of the adventures that you've had outdoors?
The Soul Summit podcast is proudly supported by some of the top companies in the hunting and outdoor world, allowing people like us to make common bonds in uncommon places. So let's take a break and hear a word from today's awesome sponsors. If you're ready for premium optics without the premium price tag that comes along with it, check out Maven Optics. This consumer direct company is turning heads and winning awards for their top quality products. Binoculars, rangefinders, rifle scopes, and spotting scopes, they've got it all. Head to mavenbuilt.com. Use the code SOULSUMMIT-GIFT on your next purchase and get a little something extra just for listening to the podcast. Elevate your life and your hunts with one of Baku's top-of-the-line e-bikes. Whether you use them on your hunting and fishing adventures, for a hand around the farm, or to commute around your local area, Baku e-bikes are not only reliable, but they add a whole lot of fun to life. Find their full line of products at baku.com, BAKCOU.com. There are some awesome bows on the market, but if you ask me, I'd say that Hoyt has some of the best bows around. Built tough to withstand the abuse of hard hunts, reliability in your shot so you can focus on the hunt, and a dead in the hand feel that keeps you coming back for more. Head to Hoyt.com and check out their new custom bow builder. If you're serious about getting into the outdoors, be sure to check out what Sawyer has to offer. From water filtration to sunscreen and insect repellent, Sawyer has you covered. not to mention Sawyer's commitment to giving back, helping fight global issues, and bring clean water to more people around the world sets them apart from the rest. Head to Sawyer.com to see what they have going on. When it comes to hunting and exploring the great outdoors, there are endless tools, gizmos, and gear, but one I never leave home without is my Onyx Maps. Knowing I have access to landowner information, property lines, topographical layers, historical and wildlife data, and so much more gives me the confidence to take my outdoor experiences to the next level. Grab your free trial right now at onyxmaps.com. Now, let's jump back into the conversation.
You know, I've spent a lot of time taking students into the outdoors, and it was funny this summer. After working 7 months in the wilderness, I called my mom and she was like, how was your course? And I didn't need to talk about how many miles we went through or how many sites we saw or like the accomplishments, but it's the personal growth for me. I get to work with students from, 14 to over 70 before. And I've seen such transformative growth when you give students the tools and empowerment to go out and do it on their own. And that feels really accomplishing and really enriching. Knowles is not a tourist agency. We're not providing anyone a checkbox experience, but it's an educational program. And we teach people how to be good mountaineers, we're not providing them a lift service to the summit, but how to do your own ropes, how to mitigate risk, how to tie your own knots, how to climb, how to do risk mitigation, all these things on your own so that people can leave the program and feel like they have a whole new skill set under their belts and then start their journey from there. And that feels really rewarding. So we talk about what is my most accomplishment. I think of the incredible people I've been able to work with in the outdoors. The social capita I have is endless. And then also the impact I've had on people through education. I just don't want people to be watching this and think that this glamorous guiding lifestyle is the only way to contribute to and the outdoor community. I've recently just balanced it with launching RecPack and growing this community online, and similar to how we met in person at events, at sharing this meal to go that we have so that people can go outside and feel empowered and not have to worry about what they're eating. And I found a whole new fulfillment through this opening up this journey and having a whole new community and meeting athletes who are using us and veterans and first responders that I hope people listen to this and get inspired to get educated and go outdoors, but also know that there's so many ways to contribute to the outdoor community. And it doesn't just have to be through going on a through hike or leading a group of students in the outdoors, but you can join Facebook forums and have conversations with people and just go on hikes. And that's equally as important.
I want to pivot here just for a bit though, and talk about RecPack and your entrepreneurial journey and what that's looked like for you. I know in this day and age, there are so many new business startups and so many people who maybe are still working that traditional 9-to-5, but have a desire to go and do the thing that they're passionate about. So if you can walk us through a bit about how you have started this and what your entrepreneurial journey has looked like.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I work with my partner, Deed, on building RecPack. We're an outdoor meal where you just add water, shake, and you get a meal to go. So unlike a dehydrated meal that you have to heat up your water, sit and eat, this is a meal for convenience, lightweight, and really high nutrition. It actually all started when Deed was my student up in Alaska. I was teaching the mountaineering course I was telling you about. And we saw Deed taking some photos and we were like, wait, what is that meal? We've never seen that before. And he very humbly was like, oh, this is my startup brand. I'm just building it. I want to take some social media photos. And me and some of the other students grabbed it and did a little photo shoot of it. And we all thought it was a really cool idea because there's this missing space in the outdoor food market between high nutrition, lightweight in convenience and something where you don't have to balance bringing a stove or heating up to get like a full nutrition box. And I know for me, when I'm doing something like mountaineering or rock climbing or horse packing, where some mistake, getting lost on a map or having a student that gets hurt, leads to what I would assume would be a 7-hour day to a 24-hour day to a 42-hour evac to maybe just getting lost and then having to do an extra 5 miles I wasn't expecting. And nutrition is the last thing that I take care of. I used to get off these wilderness courses and I'd look at the scale and I dropped several pounds in just a few weeks, which is not a space where I want to be, where I'm going in and out of the outdoors the whole time. So Adid approached me about Rec Pack. I thought it was a genius idea. Not only could I just drink my calories and get wholesome proteins, fats, and carbs, but it just is very convenient. I can be sitting on a horse, holding another horse, telling a student where to go on their map, and then have nutrition right in my saddlebag, or be mountaineering and running out of fuel like we did up in Alaska and just melting water with our body heat and then having nutrition source felt really important. So I joined that journey 6 months, about 9 months ago, and it's been such a fun endeavor. I've gotten to meet some great people like yourself, and it's opened up like the hunting community to the ice climbing world to the, we're about to go to an event in California for mountain bikers, and finding all these pockets of people that could use us in the outdoors through whatever they're doing has been really, really valuable.
What would be your advice to somebody who is kind of sitting on their idea, something that they're super passionate about, or this, you know, thing that they feel like they can solve a problem in, and they're just not quite sure if they're cut out for the whole small business owner thing? What would your advice be, Joy?
I think two parts to that. If you have a curiosity or somewhere where you want to explore more, you got to listen to that. I know as a guide, I always felt like I wanted to do more than just lead people on these trips. I felt like I wanted to contribute to the outdoor space at a greater scale than that. And then two, I really love working with Deed because he has a smart business background. He's been planning this endeavor ever since he left the military, where the idea came from. And he's really mentored me in not rushing anything. He keeps saying, we're in it for the long haul. We can't put all of our energy into one basket because what if that doesn't work out? So a really wise strategic plan is important, and making sure that nothing's, you're not rushing into anything, but you're slowly cultivating the right people to build your brand or just build your idea, whether that's a blog or a website or a new Facebook forum. Like, you got to start somewhere, and it's just the slow dripping effect that builds up. Yeah, I have a couple friends right now who love working in the outdoor space, but they're also wanting to explore other parts of their career. And they've, this past week, I've had a couple mentorship calls where I'm like, okay, if you want to start something else, you can do that, but you're going to have to build it on top of the career you already have. You're never jumping lanes 360 and running with it. Stack things on and slowly go as you start to build your idea.
Yeah, I think that's a probably a pretty good piece of advice. My advice tends to be kind of on the contrary. It's more like all eggs in one basket and you go full send.
Yeah.
That's kind of typically how my brain works. So it's nice to hear a contrast to that and just say, kind of slow it down and figure out over time without feeling like you have to just, you know, go all in on one area.
Yeah. Yeah. I fully agree with that. And when I think about, how much I love my career and how I've slowly made it over time, it's because I've gone pretty full force at all endeavors. And I'm always juggling two or three different skill sets in one season to two or three jobs at one time to try to make my passion project happen. So I think in growing a passion project, you still need to go pretty full force in order to make like the full circle work, you know? Right now, I'm training to get my professional avalanche certifications, but I'm in that education route while I'm also building Rec Pack, while I'm also guiding on the side, While I'm also working on my rock climbing certifications for this summer. I always have my hands in 5 cookie jars, but I'm going pretty full force on them. I just know that if one takes slower than the other, it's okay. I'm just building up all these skill sets.
Being a woman that's so busy, and like you said, you've got your hand in multiple different cookie jars, where do you find balance and what does that look like for you?
Okay, I don't think I find balance.
I was just going to ask, maybe you don't find balance, you know?
I would lie if I say that. Yeah, no, I don't find balance in what I'm doing, but I'm really okay with that because I'm extremely happy and passionate about all that I'm putting my energy towards. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to prevent burnout, is to make sure you're doing exactly what lights your fire so that you can mm-hmm. run at it full force. You know, even last week I was rock climbing and my muscles felt weak and I didn't feel good. And I was like, man, am I still really wanting to go full force and pursuing a rock climbing license? And I had a moment where I was like, maybe I don't. Maybe I don't want to pursue this with all my energy and I can pause, but I really want to pursue Rec Pack and building that. And I really want to pursue my avalanche education. And I was like, okay, just keep going at the things that feel really inspiring. And, you know, it's time and place for it all. But no, I don't, if anyone looked at my life, they would not say Joy has balance, but they would definitely say Joy has a lot of passion.
That's awesome. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that too. When you're doing the things that truly, you know, set your soul on fire, balance can kind of take a back burner. Not in everybody's life can that happen. You know, whether you have, you know, a big C-suite job or big family or, you know, whatever. But I think when you can, in fact, I was just talking to a young lady this morning about, their next steps in their life. They're a young married couple and they're going off to go do some exploring. And I have so much adoration for that. It's like, yes, go. There will always be time, you know, God granted, to go out and make a buck, but there's not always time to go out and say yes to the opportunity to adventure or to go travel around, you know? So I think that really living into your passion and to your purpose, I think is so important. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I know that you have a faith-based background. What does purpose mean to you?
Oh, and can I answer that question after a comment on something you just said?
Of course.
Great. You know, I just said that I think passion's really important. I also say one thing as a female in this outdoor space, and I look at other females around me, a hurdle that most females have to juggle that men don't is their biological clock and deciding to have kids in that window that we're given. I think when going at my career and spending so much time in the wilderness and exploring these technical skills and putting proficiency above all else, things like community and partnership and that time frame don't always fit into like the peak of our fitness or when we are supposed to stop our careers with our bodies to move over to that juxtaposition. So I think passion and running at things while you can is really important, but not losing hindsight of like what is a priority in like the long-term scope of your career or your priorities in life, you know? And that looks different for everyone. And that looks so different if it's pursuing financial security or pursuing strong technical skills, or like with Rec Pack, growing something to be a business that hopefully helps everyone get in the outdoors, even though right now we're just in the startup phase. Trying to do a lot of outreach. It's all in like the time frame that you're looking to pursue. And according to you, I think you commented on what was the question again?
Yeah, just talking about, you know, you have so much passion, but where does your passion and where does your purpose end or begin, or do they intertwine themselves together?
Oh, I think they definitely intertwined. Like I said before, I think we're always trying to contribute to something greater than ourselves, whether that's society or, just trying to contribute to something. For me, the past couple of years, it's been education and empowering people. I've always pursued technical skills, and ever since being a horseback rider, I always pursued teaching and education people around me. Kind of like if I'm running at something, having people come next to me and learning how to do it through the mentorship that I was given. And so when you ask about purpose and when I think about like impact to community and society, it does go back to when I lost my dad with cancer in high school or college. And I had a moment where I was like, what am I doing here? You know, why am I trying? What space am I taking up in this world? And what is my greater impact? And it came down to educating and bringing people into the outdoors. At least that's what I want my 20s to be focused around. I want so many people to have the skills and have the freedom and have the independence to choose what they want their time in life to be. And for me, I've chosen to spend majority of that in the outdoors, whether that's on weekends, after work, or months of the time in the wilderness. But I never could have had that quality of life and that proportional time outside if it wasn't through education and balance. So yeah, and I think as I grow my career, and I won't always be able to be that direct impact in taking people in the outdoors, I hope that through RecPAC I can still tap in or I can impact a community of people going into the outdoors.
One of the great things too, Joy, is that, you know, with every person that you've been able to make an impression with in the outdoor space, whether that's through experience or education or both, those people will have a ripple effect outside of you as well. And so it's really cool to think about, you know, I'm somebody who's very passionate about, you know, impacting and empowering other people to know that they're capable, you know, not to look at somebody else's life on social media and be like, that looks great. But like, no, you girl, you go do that thing. Like you have those capabilities. It might take some planning. It might take some, you know, extra accrued time off. It might take some budgeting, some reworking of things, but like you have every capability and every opportunity to go out and do the things that call to you. And I think it's so great because with each person who we end up being the gateway for, have the privilege of being able to impact, those people's lives 9 times out of 10 are going to be so much more enriched. And what they bring to the table, how they are an example for other people, how they encourage other people to go out there and live, is like, that's the end all be all for me, is knowing I might just be a little tiny part of somebody's journey, but hopefully if done right, they're going to impact somebody else as well.
Yeah, I call it planting seeds. I think my job as an instructor is to plant all these seeds, whether it's teaching people about conservation or about how an ecosystem works or a technical skill. I'm just planting little seeds of education that hopefully if they choose to invest can grow them into something else and have a beautiful opportunity after all those little seeds are grown.
So for the person listening in today that's like, man, this is exciting. Everything that Joy is doing is super cool. I'd like to figure out where to get my feet wet. What would your recommendation be in getting started?
And for folks that can't afford it, looking at doing a Knowles course or an Outward Bound course or getting into outdoor education, because it empowers you to learn how to go about the outdoors, whether it's backpacking or horsepacking or some other technical skill that empowers you to go off and do it afterwards. That is the point of the curriculum versus, you know, paying for a mountain guide to take you to the top of Mount Rainier. You might not walk away being able to climb Rainier after that, you know, so finding a educational outlet. But I also think like the power of baby steps, you know, in Eugene, I have this incredible, I call it my book club moms, and these moms I love in their 40s that have kids and successful careers. And there's like, Joy, how do we get into the outdoors? And it started just with us going car camping. And then from car camping, they started going hiking more. And then they started doing the weekly backpacking with their friends and hiking. And it's all these ripple effects to the outdoors. So just figure out, like, what are you excited about? Is it spending time on the water? Do you want to go on a sailing or sea hiking expedition? Is it through horses? Is it through just going out with awesome females? And there's all these female-based weekend trips. Or is it rock climbing at your local gym and then learning to go outside? Or, you know, Courtney, through your technical skill of hunting, is it that first and then the outdoors with it? figuring out, and then figuring out what education to go with it. And there's so many people that love the outdoors because of the mentorship and learning through it. Mm-hmm. Actually, before I pursued the outdoor industry, I looked at all my friends around me that were 5 to 10 years older in their careers. And I was at a moment where I was like, I want to be able to go outside and get my passions to happen. And I don't want to prioritize a career at the computer quite yet or in a school quite yet until I have the proficiency to go make all of my ambitions happen. And that's where I pursued Knowles, which is an educational program that empowered me through a really good community of humans. Actually, last year, me and my friend Taryn, we went rock climbing in Peru. And we were just two females with a huge backpack of gear and just running around the wilderness, going up to high elevation, running out of food, stumbling back, grabbing more food, running up and rock climbing and mountaineering. And it was so empowering, just two females in the outdoors in this remote area, that I felt so empowered through the skills I had to go do that. That when you ask me how do people get started, it's figuring out your joy and your curiosity and then like little steps towards it. And there's so many educational resources out there, whether that's like weekend backpacking courses to signing up for a week-long trip to, you know, expeditions that are all around your local area.
So many good things out there at our fingertips for sure. And we'll be sure, of course, as always, to put those resources that you mentioned into the show notes so people can get connected there if they want to pursue something like that. I'm so encouraged by this conversation, and I hope that it meets people where they are, just to get out there and do the things. Life is short, y'all, and you've got to get out and explore, have some fun, fill your bucket list adventures before it's too late. You know, I feel like so many people wait until they've got a diagnosis or, you know, until they lose somebody close to them to be inspired to go live. And if anybody takes anything away from this conversation today, I hope that it's like the time to live is right now.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. And I hope people listening to this know that they can reach out for anything. As I build this brand Rec Pack, we're cultivating a community of awesome people, from first responders to veterans to through hikers, and anyone can reach out on our Instagram or email if they want to tap into that community and get resources for being in the outdoors.
And what are those handles for people to connect with you?
Yeah, follow us on Rec Pack. It's RECPAK Co. We can even put a discount for this show that we're doing. Just send us a quick DM if you found us through it. Or you can email me at joy@recpack.co. And if there's any outdoor questions or any resources, or, you know, if someone just wants to call and talk about getting into the outdoors, I'm always an open book. There's so many ways of doing it out there.
I'm thinking that we should put our heads together on providing an experience together that you and I co-host. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, we brainstormed about horsepacking hunting, and that has not left my mind. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is definitely on the list for 2025. We're going to do some horsepack adventures, and I cannot wait. Always excited about the adventures that we're doing, but I think it'd be so fun to put our heads together and collaborate on something. Before we sign off for today, do you have any parting thoughts or words of wisdom that you'd like to put out there?
Yeah, I hope people listening to this really take away the importance of education and getting educated to make your dreams and curiosities happen. I think so often we like see on social media or a photo all of these like check boxes. But I've really dedicated my career to empowering and educating people to get outside, and just think it's so important.
I love that. Well, we'll definitely link to all those things in the show notes, as well as where to get a hold of you. Joy, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate your wisdom and your advice. And hopefully this leaves people feeling expired? Well, yeah, hopefully not feeling expired. Certainly inspired would be the mission with this. But thank you again for your time and coming on to pour into people today.
Likewise. And Courtney, like I said at the Sportsman Show, if you ever want to go rock climbing in Eugene, There's a spot right in town at the Columns or 45 minutes away. And I'd love to take you out and we can talk more about opportunities.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Count me in.
Once again, thank you for tuning into the show. We hope that your cup is full and you're ready to embrace your untamable vibe. If you enjoyed the show, could you do us a favor? Help us grow our audience by sharing your favorite episode on social media, sending the episode to a friend, and leaving us a review online. We love to hear from you. One more thing, be sure to press that subscribe button and never miss a weekly episode. See you next week.